Right, hello everybody, and welcome to this special teleclass with a very special guest coming up today. Because today we are talking to a good friend of mine, the Queen Bitch of Everything. She helps salon owners get success in their business. Just a very similar thing to what I do with the pet business owners in our group, actually. She's a really smart lady, really funny. She's got a lot of experience in what we're going to be talking about today, which is the topic of staffing. So I'm going to dive straight in and welcome Kat Smith.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm very well.
You're very welcome, by the way.
You're very welcome. Thanks so much for taking the time and coming and sharing some of your knowledge. I'm really looking forward to this call, and I'm sure all of the members are going to get a lot of benefit from it. You know, so why don't we start with you telling us a bit about exactly what you do and your business history and stuff like that.
Okay, cool. Well, as you've said, I do a very similar thing to what you do with your pet business owners. I run seminars and events for salon owners who are looking to grow their businesses and grow their salons very quickly. I've written a book on the subject, Grow Your Salon Fast, and I market that out to salons, and I have clients around the globe now who join my membership and learn how to grow their salons. Because like a lot of people who are in business, most salon owners have gone into it because they've been creatives and they've worked their way up, and they've thought, well, actually, this is really easy. I can run my own salon myself, and I can work on the floor, and I can employ staff, and I can be a salon owner at the same time. And then they get into it and they think they haven't got a fucking clue. And a lot of salons just fall apart after that. So I go in and help pick up those pieces and say, well, actually, this is what you need to put into place to make your salon grow. Because it's not just about going in and working in your business and doing the same things and just thinking you can do it a little bit better than your previous employer did. So that's me. And the reason I fell into it was I'm a psychologist by profession, and I left that industry a long time ago. And I was actually working in travel for a certain time, and my hairdresser, who I've known for a very long time, 23 years, he said to me, I've got a chance to own a salon in Notting Hill in London. I'd like you to buy it with me, and you can be the brains and I'll be the brawn. I thought, perfect, what could possibly go wrong? So I bought a salon in London, and I had no idea about the industry at all, as you do. And the reason I did that was because I was expecting a baby at the time, and I thought I could just be a nice little stay-at-home mummy, and I can have this nice little hobby owning a salon, and I can get my hair done all the time and my nails, etc. And I can just do a little bit of marketing from my kitchen table, and it'll be great. It'll be perfect. I can do it when the baby's sleeping. Yeah, so yeah, it's all that, you know. Lasted for about 5 minutes.
Reality was somewhat nice different.
Yeah, slightly different. So I owned a salon in London. Basically, we bought it when it was absolutely falling down. Was making a huge loss, and we turned it around. And when I came to sell it, I sold my share of it nearly 3 years ago. It was valued at I think it's 27 times what we bought it for. So was pretty good profit to be made from turning it around and making it into a salon that attracted customers, an endless stream of customers, and had really loyal customers, but also loyal staff. And I think that's one of the biggest things when you have a bricks and mortar business, or you have a business where you have to employ people. One of the things that can bring your business down very quickly is the staffing. And it's certainly one of the things that most salon owners tell me that they have the biggest challenge with is staff, and whether that be recruiting them, motivating them, getting them to do the work, getting them to help market themselves, all that sort of thing. It's usually staff. It's usually cash flow, staffing, usually hand in hand when it comes to the biggest challenges. And I would say that it's across the board for the majority of businesses I speak with, whatever industry it is, staffing. When you have to have staffing in your business, it's a right pain in the ass.
Definitely. So was it a bigger learning curve getting stuck into the marketing or the staffing, or both for you?
Well, I come from I've come from dealing with a lot of staff, and I was a manager of staff for a long time. And I thought I knew everything there was to know about people. And being a psychologist, I was like, I know behavior, I know how this works. But then I came to the salon industry, and they're a little kettle of fish, I can tell you that. But majority of the behaviors that they're exhibiting are no different from most people, because we all have the same motivators and the same behaviors when it comes to certain things. So staffing was just one side of it. So marketing was hard. But once I understood the principle of marketing, that was great.
Yeah.
When it came to staffing, it's that when you have something that's going wrong within the salon, staffing-wise, it almost disables it. Do you know what I mean? You can't focus on anything else. So when you've got problems with staff, or your staff don't turn up, or you've got complaints about your staff from clients, everything else just stops, and you have to concentrate on that one thing. So yeah, staffing is one of those issues. If you get it wrong, it can be
a huge time suck.
Massive time suck. And if you're going to bed, lying in bed, and the last thing you're thinking of before you fall asleep is your staff, and you've got some serious issues. But it can be fixed. There are things that you can do to make it easier for yourself.
Yeah, for sure. And we'll go into some of them now. I just want to touch upon something, Kat, everything that you've talked about so far. And if there's any of our Pet Business Inner Circle members listening to this who are thinking, well, this is a salon, this is different, I'm dealing with dogs, it's different, or I'm a groomer, or I'm a trainer, and it's different, it ain't different. Like, Kat turned around the salon using the exact same marketing methods that we teach, lead generation, follow up, all this kind of thing, premium pricing, and this is what you teach your guys now, isn't it? And the staffing, the principles are exactly the same, aren't they?
They're identical, and in fact, Dom, I have to admit, I have read your books, and they are not very dissimilar to my own. and it's true across the board, because we're dealing with humans. And it doesn't matter what industry you're in. You could be in the recruitment business. You could be in banking. You could be anywhere. It's exactly the same. People are people. And we operate on certain levels, and the things that we do are common to the human race, pretty much. So nothing I say is any different from a pet owner's business. They follow the same path. All that you're dealing with is a different service or a different kind of product. You're not dealing with anything that's any different. The principles are exactly the same.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing, because you can transcend so many different things. You can plug in different ideas from different industries, and it will still work for you.
Yeah, for sure. All right then. So let's start at the very beginning then. For where some of my guys are going to be at. And now, I've been through this myself in the past. The first thing is, you think that you can't take anybody on because nobody's going to do like a good as job as what you are. And we resist. Well, certainly a lot of my guys, I know, and I did at the time. You resist it for quite a long time, until it gets to the point where you're like, shit, I need someone like now. So when's the best time to sort of start thinking about getting people in?
Well before that. Yeah. So even if you don't think you need staff, you need to be thinking about staff when you start opening your business. Because there's four things that four mistakes that people make when they're recruiting.
Cool.
The first one is that they don't have a plan. So there's no plan to recruitment at all. It's just like you say, I need somebody. I'm getting busy. I can't do it all myself. I need someone now. But what you should be having before that happens, long before that happens, is having a plan of, okay, well, when I get busy and when I've grown, because I want to grow my business and I want to be successful, I am likely going to need a staff. So I need to have a plan. How much am I going to put aside for a budget to recruit that staff member? What type of staff member do I want to have? What are they going to look like? What are their what skills are they going to have to require them to have? What behaviors would I like them to have? Who do I know that fits that category right now? Is there someone I could approach? Is there someone I could groom? I use that term loosely, to build someone I'd like to have working for me. I know you have grooming, different kind of grooming, perhaps. So you need to be looking before you need to be filling the space, if you know what I mean. Because if you don't have a plan, that's when things go wrong. Because the second mistake that most people make when it comes to recruitment is that you do it too quickly. And you think, shit, I'm busy, I need to get something in place, I can't handle all my clients, I need a break, I need my holiday, I'm sick, I need someone to cover me. And you just go for the first person that answers your ad. Or sometimes it's only one person that answers your ad, but you might go for the first one you think is good. And then you've employed somebody, and then once you employ someone, it's pretty hard to unemploy them. And you can become, they can come with all sorts of problems that you didn't know about. And because that is because once you've recruited quickly, it's usually because you've gone with a gut feeling. And gut feelings are only about 10% of the recruitment process, the interview process. And that's mistake number three, is that thinking the interview setting is reality.
Ah, right. So what
most people
again?
Come...
Sorry, what was two? Was there no plan?
So they had no plan. Number two is you're doing it too quickly.
Too quickly, yeah.
So it's like, you're rushing into it because you have to. You need to be thinking about this and planning it and doing it as a slow process. It has to be a process rather than just rushing into it. Thinking that the interview setting is a reality is the third mistake. So you're thinking that when you've got someone in and you've done your advertising and you've selected from CVs and all the rest of it and you've got them in for an interview and you do it for 30 minutes and you chat to them and you find out that you both like drinking vodka or you love going to listen to hard rock metal at, you know, some random spots in the countryside. And you think, great, this person is, I really like them, I'm going to employ them. But what people fail to think about is that when the person is in the interview with you, you see them on their best behaviour.
Yeah.
They're going to present either really well because they really want the job, or they're not going to present at all, which is, you know, a problem we have with the younger generation right now, but we'll leave that behind for a minute. And you'll only see them in a very a virtual kind of state. So you don't see what they're like. You don't see what if they are punctual, if they turn up for work on time, if they have problems behind the scenes, do they have to have childcare and all the rest of it. You don't see that because they're only presenting for that first 30 minutes and they're very good. So I don't know what would happen in your industry, but in the salon industry, the minimum requirement that you should do when you're recruiting someone is have them in for a whole day on the salon floor and demonstrating what they can actually do. Not just their skills and techniques in terms of hair or beauty, whatever it is, but answering the phone, dealing with people, chatting with clients. Are they good with clients? Are they friendly? Do they stand back? Do they take initiative? Can they answer the phone and take a booking, for example? And I know in the same with pet business, you'll probably be looking for somebody who can do multiple tasks.
Are they going to be an asset to the business at the end of the day? Are they going to help you to grow it? You know, you don't want...
Well, that's actually mistake number four, so you've just preempted me on that one. So that's the bonus mistake that people make. is that they don't... most people don't understand the criteria for business success. So most salon owners I see, and probably most any small business owners, don't know what their criteria is to get the business to be a success. So they can't, when they're employing somebody, they don't transfer that onto the interviewee or the, you know, person that's applying for the job. So you need to know what needs to happen in your business to make it a success. So you need to know what those behaviours are of someone in your business to make it a success, so to grow your business for you. So you need to know, are they good with people? Can they take a booking? Can they work to a script if you want them to answer the phone a certain way or talk to clients a certain way? Can they do that? Do they understand that a lot of the time the marketing is about them and they'll have to go out and do it? So will they know how to read, for example? You know, giving them a book on marketing, can they actually read it? Will they understand it? So you need to know all these behaviours. And most people recruit based on a job description and skills, like, you know, can they walk a dog? Can they? Do they have a good rapport with the animal? Do they? Do they do health and safety and all checks and all the rest of it? But that's not. You can teach somebody skills. but you can't teach somebody behaviour. That has to come, it's an innate thing, they have to come from within. So you have to understand why, how your business is going to be successful and what things you need to put in place to make that business successful, and then look for those behaviours in that person.
Yeah, definitely.
Does that make sense?
Very much so, yeah. No, I think it's you've laid it out brilliantly. I think that just going back to the very first point to start with, what you talk about having a plan, you know, we rarely, certainly, possibly different for salon owners, but maybe not. You know, when you're starting off, certainly the dog walkers and the dog trainers, you'll start off thinking, you know, I just want to get enough money going to support myself, you know, and make sure that I'm going to be in business like 6 months or a year from now. Sure. Put some beans on the table and put some pepper on. But I think obviously all of my guys in the PBIC, they're implementing the marketing methods that I'm teaching. That, you know, this comes all the way down, like from Dan Kenny, doesn't it? So if they continue with this kind of marketing, their business is going to grow. You know, your business is going to grow, and it's going to grow faster, and it's going to be more profitable than anybody else's business in your town if you do everything right. So like it's the consequence of you, if you're taking more interest in your marketing and actually you know, doing this shit in your business, means you are going to grow, and you're going to get to that place where you need to take somebody on much faster than what you initially might have thought, you know. So I think having that plan, you know, this no plan thing, I think it's huge.
It is huge, and I agree with you, because if you are implementing the shit that Dom teaches you, which you should be, and you're doing it in a way that is growing your business, you will need, you know, to look at how this is going to scale and are you going to cope with it all. And if you get to a point where it's like it's too overwhelming for you, you're not going to love it anymore, you're going to hate it, and it's going to fall apart. And then it's only at that point when you do something about it. It's just another ball ache to deal with. If you do it now, and I know this is the reason recruitment is so difficult, is because it's not, you don't study it. You don't study staffing like you study marketing. It's just everyone assumes it will just, you know, you put an ad in the paper or wherever, and someone will answer your ad and you'll interview them, and that will be job done. But you actually do have to study this. This is something that you have to know. Because when it comes to recruiting staff, it's a process. And if you know the process and you have the process all mapped out and how it's going to work, then you don't fear it and you can use it to your advantage. And then you can be really picky about the people that you put in. And they're going to be more successful in the long run, and you are going to have less hassles. And you're not going to have to recruit often. You're going to have to do it once, maybe, or twice. Rather than having to find someone and find somebody else and find somebody else. And we only fear this process because we're not comfortable with it, because we don't talk about it all the time. People don't really talk about staffing when it comes to small businesses. They just assume that, you know, I'll just do what everybody else does. And well, what does everybody else do? The same thing, and they have major problems with it. So, you just have to, same shitty results. And you have the same RC issues with staff all the time. And if you can get around the fact that this is actually it is a process that has steps to it, and it's very simple. It may require a little bit of work at the front end, and just if you change your thought process around it and you change your approach around it, it becomes so much easier. And you're left with, you know, is anyone now who's sitting in your listening to this message right now, and you're at a position where you're just growing your business, this is not too late to start. You need to be doing it now. You need to be thinking about starting now. If you've got to a point and you're listening to this and you are desperate for staff, it's a different process. But you need to be having a plan, sitting down and planning out what it is that you require your staff to do and to behave like, and what type of person that you're looking for. So it's not too late. It's just, it's a different step in the process.
Slightly different. All right, maybe we'll go into those processes a little bit in a minute, yeah? Do you think? Yeah, I was just going to go back a second and say that, I like what you said then about the process. I think that, because it's almost, I'm comparing it in my head now when you said that to the process of writing a book, you know, because that's like another thing, you know, where people would be like, oh shit, it's this huge, enormous thing. It'll take me forever. I don't know where to start. I'll start tomorrow. And then they never get on with it. But it's just a process, isn't it? As we both know, because we've written a week.
We have, yeah.
And, But what I was going to go back to, Kat, first was just to take it back a second. I think that, yeah. Now you, I know you. You maybe he's telling us a little bit about some of the stuff that you did in the salon might help to get the message across and paint the right kind of picture. I wanted to talk about getting, certainly for my guys, 9 times out of 10, I think my guys are going to be starting off like I did as a one man band, you know, and then they're going to be bringing people in from there. So I think it's imperative. I mean, it's important anyway running a business, but it's imperative if you are starting like that, before you bring staff on, that your business, your current business with you in it, is like as profitable as it can be, isn't it? You know, because like, yeah, as I've found, premium pricing in my business from day one made it much easier for me to invest in, you know, my own marketing, education, staff, books, print runs, you know, websites, all this kind of thing. You know what I mean? Becomes so much easier, doesn't it? When you're,
yeah,
I'm just thinking of the, you know, if you're a dog walker who's like, I'd much rather be a dog walker who was full and charging £25 a walk than being a dog walker who was full charging £10 a walk looking for staff, because you're going to have so much more to play with, aren't you?
You are, yeah. Yeah, you're right. Everything has to be, the foundations have to be in place before you can, take on another challenge.
And you were very much premium priced in the salon, weren't you?
Yes, we were. And we raised our prices all the time. We were in a niche. We created a niche for ourselves. We were an organic salon. We had certain clientele. We had our ideal client. We had them all mapped out. We only took certain people. We sacked a lot of clients, actually, and my staff were trained to refuse anybody who didn't fit the ideal client bill, and that they would be very nice to them and say, well, you're not, you know, the right fit for us, so is it someone down the road, I'll take you, which was, you know, good for both salons.
Word soon gets around, doesn't it? Word gets around when you do that, doesn't it?
It certainly does. And to the point where clients would come in and beg us to take them. Yes, I'll follow your processes, I promise. I'll wash my hair with shampoo. And then because of that, we could put the prices higher and higher and higher, and it wasn't an issue then. It wasn't about the price anyway. It was about the personality in the business, and we were selling personality, basically. Because the first book I wrote was 101 Naked Confessions of a Gay Hairdresser, which was positioning my ex-business partner as the face of the salon. Yeah. And that worked really well. Yeah, because we were just another salon on the high street. We weren't, you know, Notting Hill, there's zillion salons, you know, the Yummy Mummies in Notting Hill. So we had to position ourselves very differently to get the good result. And by the time we'd done all that, then, you know, pricing just didn't even come into it. It was just, they're just
happy to get in, aren't they? Yeah, there's so many hoops
they were
through, and your reputation precedes you.
Yeah, and it does take some time to do that, but as soon as you whack your prices up, it's one of those easy slopes to get onto. You position yourself with a high price, and people think, oh, must be a really good quality service if it's a high price. It kind of begets that kind of thing. And as long as you're delivering on that good service, then there shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah, the power of a book again as well, isn't it? This is, you know,
It is the power of a book, yeah. Yeah, I highly recommend anyone write one. The first book I wrote was just, I know, Dom, you talk to your guys about daily emails, and
yep,
I know you write daily emails. I'm on your list, and I get two different accounts, I get them too. So if I don't get the first, you know, read the first one and delete it, I get the second one as a reminder.
I'm everywhere.
You are all over my inbox. You are all over my inbox. I can't get rid of you. And I used those daily emails to write a book. So basically I took 90 of those emails that I'd written over a period of time, topped and tailed them, took off the dear X and took off the kind regards at the bottom and the PS. And I made them as short stories. So 90 of those went into the book. And then in between those 90, I put 11 top tips of how to care for your hair. So that became 101 Naked Confessions of Gay Hairdresser. So there you go. There's your book. You're already writing, you've already done it. So it's not difficult. And people love that kind of thing. It was a nice little pocketbook. It was fit in the handbag. It was bright pink. Yeah, it was great.
Greatest gift ideas. Too, actually. Yeah, it was a good one.
Did you?
Yeah, I did, yeah. What was I going to say there? I was funny. I was on somebody else's podcast yesterday. One of my guys, Nick Benger, talking about content creation stuff, and I literally said, you know, this is why you should be writing daily emails, because emails become blogs, become courses, become books, you know, and like yours. I haven't actually done that myself in exact way, but that just shows that it can be done and it can be a powerful tool to.
Okay, and talking about staff in that context, they loved it. They loved the book, and they would hand it out to clients and that they were looking after. And, well, this is my new boss, Terry, and Kat wrote it, and blah, blah, blah. And so that gave them something to hang some marketing on as well. So it gave them something to hand to their clients and say, yeah, here's a copy, here's your personal copy. I'll get one of them to sign it for you if you like. And it gave them the in to start talking to their clients about extra things. So yeah, it gave...
Interesting, and make them feel good about working there too, I guess, for some of them.
Very much so. Well, you know, it was funny because you often overheard them speaking about, to their clients, just in general chit-chat, saying, well, I've never worked for a seller when they've written a book before. So, yeah, they took a lot of pride in it, a lot of pride. And, in fact, I didn't. Exactly. No, it's true. Most of them are there. I've been there for a long time. And they're still there because I come back to London every now and again to get my hair done, and they're still there. In fact, they came to see me at an event just recently. And but my biggest cheerleading team was brilliant.
Oh, brilliant, brilliant, yeah. Fantastic. Right, let's get back to the stuff in. That's awesome. We've got a plan now. We've got a 4-point mistakes plan that we want to avoid. And so we need a plan. We want to make sure that maybe we'll cover both aspects of it. Then maybe we'll cover where people should be if they're not thinking about staff, but they should be. And then maybe we'll look at you said it was slightly different, didn't you? If you were in more of a if you were more desperately needing to take
people. Principle is exactly the same. Some of the things you can do when you're not looking immediately, it can be a bit more long term, so we can cover that. And if you are looking immediately, you still have to have that plan, so you still have this basic plan in place. So I'll give you the basic plan first.
Fabulous, yeah. But is this like a recruitment plan, is it?
So basically this is, you need to sit down and think about these things and write these down. So
pen and paper ready, everyone.
Yeah. Oh, God, the pressure. So these are things you're going to have to think about. How much time do you have to recruit somebody? So like we said, are you looking instantly? Is it urgent? Do you currently have staff and you're losing someone that you didn't expect to? So what's your time frame? And if it's not urgent, you can involve multiple steps to get the best outcome. So you can look at different ways of getting recruits through the door. But if you've got an urgent need, if you've got existing staff, can you fill the gap temporarily with those existing staff and buy yourself a bit more time? So you can take the urgency away from it. Or do you really, really, like as a gun to your head, do you have to have that staff in your room right now? Because if that's the case, then you're going to have to be very clever in the way you do things. So the second thing is money. So how much we always talk about money and it's always negative, but how much can you spend on recruitment? So what kind of figure can you put around this? Do you have an unlimited budget where you'll get anything you want, or you have a small budget and you need to do things a little bit more to a small budget scale? But how much are you prepared to spend to get the perfect candidate through the door? And I know you all have taught your guys this, that when you're talking about getting an ideal client, you talked about the average value of your client over a year, mm-hmm. So how much they spend with you in a year. Are you prepared to spend that much to get someone, a recruit through the door, or a percentage of that? So if that person is worth to you, I don't know, say £10,000, how much are you prepared to spend to get that £10,000 into the door? So are you prepared to spend £5? Are you prepared to spend £20? Are you prepared to spend £1,000 or £5,000? You know, what is your profit on getting that person through the door? Because they have to make profit for you. It's not just hiring a staff member and paying them a wage. It's the wage plus the profit they're going to make for you. So what is it worth to you to get that perfect candidate through the door? And so think about it like you're buying a new client, basically. Mm-hmm. And the third thing is about, you have to also think about the market conditions. So is there high or low employment where you are at the moment? Think geographically, so, you know, in your local area, but also think about your industry. Is there high or low employment in the industry at the moment, and what's the reputation of your industry at the moment? I don't know about your industry at all. I don't know if there's a glut of dog walkers, groomers.
Yeah, there is pretty much. Competition is getting pretty rife, yeah, in most big
cities. So is there loads of people who want to do it? Are there loads of people leaving their jobs who want a different sideline hustle? What is the current market? Do you have to go and scrape the barrel? So I know in the health care and beauty industry at the moment, it's really hard to find staff. There's a very few people who have been trained anymore. People are not going into the industry. And there's not very many highly qualified staff members out either because they've gone off and created their own salons. So it's harder to get the staff. There's not such a big pool to select from. So they're going to be very different in the way they do things. And then your plan is to not make any emotional decisions. So basically, the more time you can give to recruit somebody and have this plan in place and execute it and train the staff member, the more successful your hire will be. So if you can give yourself as much time as possible, right?
Yeah.
So then you need to create a not a job description as such. It's like a job description. Job descriptions usually come in the form of, you know, this is what they want you to do. You get out of bed in the morning, you come to work, you open the door, you check the cash tillers, you know, balance, you'll turn the lights on, you'll boil the kettle, blah, 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 blah. So, you know, it's basically like a list of things. Yeah. You have to look at, so here's a really good analogy. So if you look at a typical bell curve, do you know those curve, a graph that has a curve, a line that goes up like a shape of a bell and comes down again, and everybody sort of fits on there when you're doing examination markings and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And at one end of the curve is the really the percentage of candidates who are going to be really crap. The other end of the curve is going to be candidates that are super awesome, that are, you know, the super performers. They're very, very rare people to find. And in the middle of that curve will be everybody else. Everybody else in that middle of the curve can work to a job description. So can the crap 5% and so can the top 5%. So which one of those are you going to choose? So job descriptions aren't very good at getting the ideal candidate through the door. So you have to start thinking about behaviours. So what behaviours would you like them to have? What things do they need to be doing in your business, A, to build it, but also to make sure that they don't destroy it at the same time? So if they have to answer the phone, can they answer the phone? Can they answer it in a nice fashion? Can they speak properly? Do they have a brain in their head so that they can be intuitive and say, you know, well, here's a really good example from life yesterday. My birthday's coming up in a couple of days' time, so happy birthday to me. And I said to my husband, Mr. QBV, I said, I would like to do stand-up paddleboarding because I live in Dubai, so we have summer all year round pretty much, so I want to go and do stand-up paddleboarding. And he ran a company. And he spoke to a lovely lady there and he said, I'd like to book my wife and us on a paddleboarding course. Can I do it for Saturday? And she said, oh, I'm sure you can. I'll take your number and I'll get one of the instructors to call you back. He said, oh, okay, that's fine. Kind of expecting her to actually take the booking. And then he didn't hear back. So he rang them after lunch and he said, he rang again. And she said, oh, well, no, they're all out with customers at the moment, so they're all out on the sea. So obviously they kind of called you back by now, but I'm sure they'll call you back at some point and give you a time that they might be available. So he put the phone down and said, rang me and said, you're not going paddleboarding. I said, oh, that's not fair. He said, this is the problem. Today's Thursday, it's the last day of our week. Paddleboarding would be on Saturday. He said, surely a person who answers the phone, who's supposed to be administrator, takes the booking and then tells the instructor what time the clients are going to come in, rather than the instructor coming in and saying, I can take clients at X number of time. So In terms of behavior, you want them to be following a script. Can they follow a script? Can they think about it? Can they say, okay, well, here's what the product is to offer. How do I offer the product? Can I offer the product in a way that's going to get the booking? That's the kind of behavior that you're looking for. The behaviors of, do they turn up on time? Get them to come in early in the morning. You know, do dog walkers have to get up early to pick up dogs and take them for the best walks when it's really quiet? Do they do them at night? Are they a night person? Are they a morning person? Get them to show you how they've done it in the past. So here's the thing. When it comes to recruitment and you're sitting down the interview itself, past performance is a very high predictor of future behaviour. Mm. And I'm going to repeat that because it's so important. So past performance is a very high predictor of future behaviour.
You talk about this in dog training.
If you can, really?
If the dog's done something before, if he's bitten someone before, or if he's run away before to chase a rabbit, chances are he's got much more chance of doing it than a dog who hasn't, you know.
Exactly. And it's exactly the same for humans, exactly the same. So, I mean, you could be the best presenter for that 30 minutes of the interview and you could be, you know, lovely and say all the right things. But actually, if you are a person who's notorious for getting up, and I had one guy I worked with who I've heard a zillion and one late excuses from this guy. And I was before I owned the salon, so I didn't employ him, so unfortunately I couldn't sack him. I tried. But, you know, he slept in, the alarm didn't go off, a second alarm didn't go off, his bicycle got stolen, he ran for the bus but he missed it, three buses went past and they were all full, there was a fire in his house and firemen had to come and rescue them and he didn't get much sleep. It just, the list went on and on. I swear to God, the worst one, the day that I wanted to actually attack him against the wall and bash his brains out with a sledgehammer, was he said, I was on time, I was in the building, but the lift was slow.
For fuck's sake. Okay. Well, I could just picture you going all Vinnie Jones on him.
But his behaviour, his past performance is always going to be a good predictor of future behaviour. And I had salon owners come to me and say, well, I've taken this guy on. I employed him previously and he left, or I sacked him. I've taken him on because I'm really desperate. What do you think's going to happen? I said, what do you think's going to happen? And sure enough, he would be sacked, you know, quite soon down the track. So always, when you're interviewing, get them to give you examples of things they've done in the past. So instead of saying, can you write a report? Say, give me an example of a time when you wrote a report. What did you write about? Or what was in the report? And how was it received? If it's that they have to take money from clients, tell me how you had to take payments in your previous job and walk me through the process.
Staff supremacy cut, and I recently did that with the girl that I just took on in the last 2 months, and yeah, use those exact, and that was they were brilliant, those questions.
It's going to give you an idea of
It just makes them think, doesn't it, as well? And
well, it kind of throws them, and when you're in a situation like that, and if you're presented with that kind of question, you're actually very honest in your reply, because you don't have time to think and lie or think and make up a story. You actually have to think, and what happens with your brain is it thinks back to the most recent thing that you've done, and it's usually quite an accurate presentation of what's gone on. So you get a really honest answer from them, and from that answer you can say, okay, well, yeah, they'll fit with them or it won't, you know, or not. And then get them in for the day, or 2 days if you have to, and just say, this is part of the interview process. Mm-hmm. You have to come in and you have to do the job for 2 days. You have to shadow someone for the morning and do it yourself for the afternoon. And then watch what they're doing. Is what they're doing congruent with their actions? So what they're saying congruent with their actions? Are they saying they do X, Y, and Z, but they actually don't do X, Y, and Z? Check how that works. And if you do it over a 2 day period or even a week period, I mean, go as much as you like. You want them, they want a job, you know, tell them this is the process. And then see where it starts to break down. Can they handle the early morning starts if you're getting them to come in 5 days a week at 6 a.m? You know, are they able to do that, or do they miss one, or, you know, are they not up for this? So make it make them jump through the hoops as much as possible so you can actually see their true characters. And especially if you're in a small business, if you've got one or two, you become quite a close, tight little team, and your culture in your business needs to be such that everybody has to get along. And when you're doing that process, get other staff members, if you have them, to ask them questions as well, because they'll speak differently to other staff because they won't be on their guard so much as when they're speaking to you as the business owner. And you'll get a good feeling from your other staff members of whether they're going to rub along with them or not.
Yeah. So is it more? I was going to say you're not always necessarily going to get someone who has experience in the thing that you are, that they're doing now. Certainly not with our job. Do you know what I mean?
But that's a good thing.
So I guess you, in a way, that should be the easy part, shouldn't it? Is teaching them the thing. You know, yeah. if you've got your procedures and stuff like lockdown, and you. Yeah. You know, it should be eminently teachable to almost anybody, shouldn't it? So it's the behaviours that we're looking for, because they'll be able to give us examples of things that they've done in other walks of life that will show the type of behaviours that we can expect. Yeah, I get it, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And it doesn't have to be anything related to that industry. So it can be, there'll be a time when you dealt with a complaint from your family. So, you know, what was the complaint and how did you resolve it? If you're looking for how they might handle client complaints and they've never had a client before. You can put the questions to them on everyday life things, and what gives you an idea is how they handle it in everyday life will be how they handle it when it comes to your clients or to your business. And there's just that point about when you're training people's skills, is that when you've selected your person, you think they're all great and the behaviours are what you want and all the rest of it, and they have not a Scooby about how to do what you do. What I do see, and I have seen as well as a lot of other businesses, is that they give someone a week or two training and then they leave them to it. And that's a kiss of death. What you should have in place is processes that they have to follow. So you have to have them a little manual or a little book, or you make them write down things that you want them to, you know, the absolute, you know, things that you must follow. There's no negotiation on it. Preferably you have processes written down, not boring, big manuals, but you know, a little pocketbook, and everything's written down exactly how you want them to answer the phone, how you want them to greet clients, what you want to do with them, with the dogs, or I don't know, do cats as well. You know, what products you want them to use, what you're not allowed to use, you know, where they're allowed to walk, where they're not allowed to walk, that sort of thing. So everything is in that book, so they have no wiggle room, basically, to say, well, I didn't know how to do something. It's all in that book. And you sit with them and go through the book, and you have to make sure they understand everything, and they sign it off and say, yep. And then follow them over and lead by example, and don't leave them for just 2 weeks and then go on with it and think you're busy. You're going to have to spend time with this person. You're going to have to nurture them for quite some time until you're absolutely sure that they've got everything. Because humans are funny. We are a funny race. We like to take the shortest route to something, and we're inherently lazy. So we will start looking for ways out of doing things. So if you've got these lovely little processes in place that you have in place because you know that they work, your staff member are probably going to stuff it up somehow or change it somehow, or they'll come up with ways that you would never think are possible of doing something. Even though you thought you had the tightest procedure in place, they'll come up with a completely alternative route to it and fuck it up for you. Because all staff, all people work on their own agenda. So I know we probably don't have time to go in a lot about the motivational parts of people, but when I say to people, your staff are not your family and your staff are not your friends. They're not going to be there for you in the rest home when you're in old age. They're not going to come and see you and bring you chocolates. They are not going to help you out when the bailiff is at the door and taking the keys. They're going to be taking the money out of the till that you owe them before the bailiff gets in there, and they'll be running. So they won't owe you anything. They won't be there. You can be friendly with them, but they're not family and they're not friends, basically. So don't treat them like that. Everybody has their own agenda. So my agenda is very different from your agenda, Dom. Mm-hmm. My agenda at the moment is making sure that I get to school on time to pick up my daughter right now, and I'm thinking about all the ways I'm going to make sure that that's all put together. I'm not thinking about your particular right now thinking about talking to you, but in the back of my mind is like, well, if I had to go urgently to and drop everything, I would. I'd just drop everything and say, bye-bye, doll, this call is over. And so that's my own agenda. I want to help you, so I will be on this call kind of thing. Do you see what I mean? This
is how it's exactly the same. Yeah. We're all selfish to a degree, aren't we? We're all looking out for our own interests. Like marketing, isn't it? And, not taking the clients or the prospects' feelings and wants and needs into account. You know, you're daft if you think that the staff are going to do what you want them to do, what they should be doing, just because, you know, you say that you like them.
Exactly. Because they have their own issues. They'll have problems at home. They might have somebody saying, well, why are you a dog walker? That's not very good. That's, you know, that's really low. You know, why are you going back into banking? I can't see the need for you to do this. Why? And they'll have that in their head as well. So there'll be all sorts of things going on for them, and they won't, you know, you might want them to take a client late because they're a really good client and they pay a lot of money and they're a really loyal client, but that person's going to say, well, I don't want to walk late. I want to go down the pub with my friends. I'm going to say, no, that's not possible when that client asks. But you, as a business owner, will say, yes, absolutely, that's absolutely fine. So you're going to have to work with this, and the procedures that you put into place are so important, mm-hmm. and that they're all laid out, written out, so that they know exactly what they are. So when you say to them, well, this is the job, this is what you need to be doing, you agreed to do these procedures, and then you can say, well, you know, you're performing and you're not performing. This is, you're doing really well, you're following everything I want you to do, or you're not. Because you know what makes your business successful, because you've built it up, and you've built it up to a point where it, you know, is successful. You do things the way, like you said at the very beginning, we all do the things the way we want to do them, and we hesitate about bringing on staff because we could do it better ourselves. And even though we know we're struggling because of the workload, we would rather do it ourselves than give it to somebody else to fuck up. So if the procedures are in place, that person has less chance of fucking up. So you might fuck up only 20% of the time rather than 80% of the time.
Yeah.
So all this has to be in place to make sure that it's going to be successful. This isn't part of your plan. Everything, all your plan has to be laid out. Mm. And if we're talking about, so I'll just go back to when we've got some time to do this, and you're not employing someone straight away and you do have some time, one of the best ways to recruit people is to everyone you know, and talking to everyone you know, is kind of, like I said, you groom them. There's a particularly fantastic, so it's an example of a particularly fantastic waiter at the hotel that you and I go to in Cork every 3 months, and he is amazing. He's been there since I've been going there, which is nearly 5 years, and he is absolutely fantastic. He's been so great that I promoted him to general bar manager or food manager or whatever in that particular time. So very quick promotion growth. And I've asked him, and another business owner has asked him, if he was ever to think about leaving his industry, I would employ him immediately. Not because he would fit with anything that I do, but the way he does things, his behavior, his attitude, his intuition, his incentive-driven kind of things, is the type of person I would employ. So when you're looking for someone, you're looking for that when your general population of people that you know or people that you come across on a daily basis, you can say to them, hey, I don't have a job right now, but if you're ever considering coming into this business, into pet business, would you consider speaking to me first, because I'd like to offer you a job if I have one. And you get people on the wait list. So you have an idea of who they are. And then if you have an opening, you ring them and say, hey, I've got an opening. Would you like to apply for it? So you've already got someone that you know might be your best fit. So you don't have to go and go externally, if you know what I mean. You don't have to go and put an ad in the paper.
That's a really good point. I guess it just comes down to having your eyes open to it, isn't it, now, and having your radar up all the time.
Yeah. And the bonus for you guys on this call is that, no, you will.
Mm. Yeah, exactly, yeah. And if you're a serious business owner and you're in this for the long term kind of thing, you big shift for me, I think, a few years ago was starting to think a bit long game with everything, you know. So it's like, okay, you know, I'm happy for you to kind of join my list now. And yeah, you know, I know you get a lot of benefit for this thing that I have to offer, but you're not quite ready yet. So, you know, that's, you know, when you're ready, then, you know, that'll be there for you. And it just, it's a different way of thinking about things, isn't it? Rather than thinking of it as this sort of transactional thing, it's transformational, you know.
It's exactly the same, like you say, it's a transformational sale. We talk about transactions and transformations. It's not just a transaction. It's not just to go out, put an ad and come in, interview, done, you're employed. It's the long-term goal, because we like working with people we have a relationship with. And relationship doesn't happen instantly. I know it happens instantly on Tinder or Grindr or whatever you're into, but it's not a relationship. It's a one-off transaction. So it works.
Definitely.
Not that I know anything about either of those.
I don't know. You rattled them off pretty quickly.
Oh, I know. I just have to talk to me.
So a couple of things then, because we're coming into the last guy in 5-10 minutes. Are we... Same process for part-time staff as well?
Absolutely. Yeah. There's no difference.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, no difference. The only difference is their contract, isn't it? Is, you know, what are you prepared to pay them? And I think one of the things is don't give away the park. Just when you're thinking about paying somebody, give them enough that it's going to be worth their while, but also that there's some leeway for you to have some growth with them, so you can give them raises. So don't start off high and then think, oh shit, can't give them anything to incentivize them. Start low. So even start thinking, you know, giving them a basic plus commission. You know, if they bring in clients for you, they get a percentage of some of that, or if they, I know, set targets for them, if they get extra, do extra hours or whatever, they get incentives for that.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But start low, because you know, taking the staff is actually a really costly exercise. But also, they need to be bringing money into your business at the same time. So they're an investment. Staff are an investment, and you need to get that return on investment. So you can't just say, well, I'm going to give you 15 grand a year, and that's what you're going to get. And you're just going to walk all these dogs for me, or you're going to groom all these dogs, or whatever it's going to be that they're doing, and that you're not getting a return on it, because this is a cost and just becomes a fixed cost. So you want to make sure that they are getting something, you're getting something back from them in return. So whether that's, you know, they have to get referrals, they have to tell everybody that they go out with, can you please give me 3 email addresses of friends that you have who have dogs, and would it be right if I just mentioned your name in an email to them saying, you know, we walk your dog and you love us, and perhaps you could consider us. And that's part of, and that's built into their package. You know, every 3 they get an extra £10, whatever it is that you think is a good incentive. Make that happen, because you want not them just to be working for you, you want to be working for the business and bringing money into the business at the same time. Otherwise you're going to lose money very quickly.
Yeah, I think those last 3 sentences would be worth the fee alone just to, yeah, I think it really does change you. It does, doesn't it? You know, it's like, this is not like, this is, and I think the coming back to what we said at the start, I think it comes down to the planning, doesn't it? And not doing it too quickly, because if you're under pressure, then you tend to do all these things, you know, you'll pay too much, you'll take the wrong person, you'll give away the farm kind of thing. Yeah. And then, and you'll end up with somebody who's actually going to be adding baggage to the business and taking time away from you rather than helping you to grow it and give your time back to, you know, either spend marketing or, you know, chilling on the beach or whatever the hell it is that you want to get out of your business.
Exactly. And you're not in business to pay somebody else to do something. You're in business to make money for yourself, to become financially free, really. That's the end of the day.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. I've so much value in this call. I've just given you everything. Amazing.
You are. You've always been amazing.
So much to know.
So
much to know.
There is, yeah. And I'm actually gonna pull you back in to use a phrase at some other time, Kat, aren't we?
I'm not one of those retractable leads, am I? Those horrible retractable leads.
No, they're very different, as we both know. Yeah.
They're very good. My daughter's still got the scars from that bloody thing.
Yeah, I remember. I'll talk
to you. Wasn't even our dog.
Other time, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Mm. No, I'm good. This has been absolutely amazing, Kat. And I want to thank you very much for your time. I've gotten so much out of it. I'm sure everybody else has as well. I know there's a lot more to all this. So I'm, like I said, I'm going to get you back in certainly to speak to the Platinum people in a bit more detail about this and maybe do a bit of a Q&A. Because, you know, I'm a big fan of learning from people who are smarter than me about certain things. So I'm, you know, as we both are, I know. where can people go to get on your list and stuff, Kat? Because you write fantastic emails too. They're very personality driven. No, they are. They're unbelievable. I love reading them. So where can people go just to find out a bit more about you, or if they want to get your book or whatever? Where can they find out more about that?
So if you want to get on my list, that's great. That's www.growyoursalonfast.com. You can subscribe to my 33 ideas. I think if you do the /33 ideas, that page will come up. If anybody would like a copy of my book, I'll give away a free copy.
Super duper. That's absolutely wonderful. Thank you very much, Kat Smith. You've been a legend, as always.
Pleasure. Lovely to speak to you, as always.
Speak to you soon.
Ciao.